Welcome to Haunt Topic Radio, the podcast for haunters by haunters. These are our scary visions.
Having any type of parallel walls, bad. If you can actually just get one wall to kind of, shift a little bit 10 degrees, you know, for a good length, it's going to help keep standing waves from happening. I mean, it's another way to keep things from bouncing off 90 degrees, right? So, I mean, just little things like that. But I really iterate to people because they ask, well, how can I soundproof my haunt? And, you know, I honestly say you can't. You're not going to soundproof it. But you can mitigate it. If anybody comes to me, now I'm thinking about this, that heard this podcast, I want to offer 10% on effects and services that we do for sound design. So just mention Haunt Topic and there we go.
Holy crap. October is coming soon. The time of this recording, it's August, and my haunted house, the Dead Factory, opens up September 30th. When are you guys opening up? Yeah, we're open September 30th this year, since September 30th falls on Friday and October 1st falls on Saturday. We decided to go ahead and open up early this year. Still not sure if we're opening up in Halloween, which is on a Monday, but we'll see. Anyway, hope you're getting your build on, getting psyched up for Halloween. In this episode of Haunt Topic Radio, we talk to Ken Webster from SinfulAudio.com. And Ken is the man who did our sound effects for the Dead Factory this year. Well, not all the sound effects, because I had some sound effects that I was using, but Ken helped out immensely. And actually, part of this interview, I will embed a clip of some sound effects that Ken did for the factory. So stick around through the episode to hear that. We're going to pick at Ken's brain and talk about soundproofing and sound design for your haunted attraction. If you're needing audio or just some information or some tips on sound design, creating sound effects, soundproofing your haunt, or different equipment to use, Ken Webster is your man. In the Haunter's Toolbox segment, I will include some other ideas and ways to create sound effects and to soundproof your haunt. Soundproof the rooms in your haunt. So this whole episode's about sound and using sound in your attraction. I'll keep the intro a little short this time. We're going to include the rest of our story from the Night Keep, Retica. We got a few more chapters of that left. And then once that's over, we'll start including some more sounds and music from other dark horror and ambient artists throughout the year. And don't worry about taking notes. Everything with this audio episode will be over at haunttopic.com/soundproof-haunt. That's where the blog article will be, and all the links and information to this podcast episode will be over there. And of course, if you're looking for audio help, go contact Ken Webster at sinfulaudio.com. Well, happy haunting. We'll have another episode in September, which is getting close. So go get your haunt on and enjoy this episode with Ken Webster on sound design. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Not much. How you guys doing?
Excellent. Good. Excellent.
I was just laughing because my 8-year-old is upstairs. Well, he's 8. Okay, so he's used to me watching me playing video games. Uh-huh. He's up there playing Resident Evil by himself right now.
Oh, geez.
So he's like, Dad, this isn't too bad. This isn't too scary. So, yeah, I hear him upstairs. So I don't know if he's probably up there, probably got eaten by a zombie or something. So
a buddy of mine, he and I, when we were younger, when the very first Resident Evil came out, we were playing it. It was a dark room, and he had the atmosphere going on. And I'll tell you, it scared the living bejesus out of me.
Right. Yeah, I remember the very first ones. Like, I think it was on PlayStation 1 or whenever the first one came out. I think that was about the scariest one. There was something about the soundtrack and the damn zombie that jumped out of the hallway. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So is that what got you hooked into the audio thing, is being scared shitless when you were playing video games as a kid?
No, actually, I was a music major when I was growing up as a kid, out of high school. And then, it wasn't until 5 years ago, six, that a friend of mine, Christina Cordham, she works on Grimm, that television series. She's
right on.
She's a physical effects artist, and her husband ran a haunted house at the time. And she kind of invited me to the West Coast Haunters Convention. And she said, "Did you know there's possibly a market for sound effects and all that?" I said, "No." She goes, "Do you know how big the Halloween industry is?" I said, "Pretty big." She goes, "Yeah, probably second to Christmas," you know?
Yeah.
And so I just kind of got my foot in the door and kind of went from there. I was raised on Bela Lugosi and all the old horror movies. Mom loved to, you know, show me behind the scenes stuff. So I never got too freaked out on horror movies. So not too bad.
No, that's good. That's good. How has audio changed from the old classic horror movies to what happens in a modern day horror movie, and what do you do in a haunt?
Wow, a lot of questions there. So from the old movies up to today, so the one difference I can tell you is how the sound effects are made, for sure. So back, let's say the 50s through mid 70s, all of your props, especially like if you take Disney as an example or any other large studio, all the props to make particular sounds were created before the sounds could be made. So if you wanted the sound of rain, you would take like dried beans and put them in this big wheel and turn it so it sounded like, you know, these beans would just rotate and fall as they came to the top, and it sounded like rain. But they would always make these props to make these sounds. And as technology got better, and you can kind of see it in Star Wars too, you started getting into synthesizers. You started getting into the ability to morph sounds and to layer sounds. And you had still kind of the old school, let's do some Foley, create something new. But as we've gotten, you know, as the technology's gotten better, we've been more able to manipulate sound at a whole different level in terms of just, you know, you can take a waveform and pretty much do anything you want to it today to create a sound. So I think it's just an abundance of technology versus then, and you know, again, creating physical props to make sounds versus sitting down at your laptop and using software to do it. I mean, that's the big change, I think. So
that's the kind of difference, or like, you know, how people make props nowadays, where they, you know, go get some plastic, you know, soda bottles, and mm-hmm. and you get a little bit of monster mud, and you melt the soda bottles with your heat gun and stretch them out over another form. Yeah. you're doing that digitally with the sounds that you create, right?
I'd say 60 to 70% digital. I am still of the old school. I like to go out and,
oh, bless you.
Oh yeah, I think I'm just old. I don't even
No, that's like comparing, like, you know, the new Scooby-Doo and the old Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I've been trying to teach Kate, is like, listen to the soundtrack underneath the cartoon. These people are making, you know, they're taking stuff, buckets and sponges and making noise.
Oh yeah. I mean, it you know, partly, and I have to admit, it's kind of fun. Like for some sounds off of a few of, actually, I've reused them a few times on some libraries. I went in and I went into Home Depot, one of my favorite places, and you get some metal pipe, or you get some corrugated aluminum or anything like that that is sensitive to temperature. And then you go get some dry ice and a couple microphones, and you get some really cool stuff. So like one of the haunts we did actually 2 years ago, they had a like a freezer room. And I thought, oh, how cool is this? So you had the creaking of metal, and that's that high pitched sound that it makes when it kind of compresses through cold.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun. So that's why I like doing the old school stuff.
Now, were you always like this, you know, were you as a kid, you know, interested in sound and science and stuff like that? Or is this just something that progressed?
Sound design progressed. I was a geeky kid, I guess. I did the science stuff. I tell you, I'm surprised I didn't get into doing more pyrotechnics, because I love blowing stuff up. So used to make my own gunpowder-ish. yeah. Learned that from an encyclopedia, as a matter of fact, the proper mixture for it. So
yeah, an encyclopedia. What is that?
No,
I mean a real book.
Kids today, yeah, no idea what that is.
Just speaking to your smartphone.
Yeah, well, I don't even know. Can you buy encyclopedias anymore?
I doubt it.
Yeah.
Though if you want a set, I think I still have one.
Yeah.
A set down in the basement in the crawl space somewhere, locked away, probably behind 30 boxes of Halloween stuff. But
I think you might be able to make a donation or get an escape room to buy them from you. So
yeah,
there you go. Yeah.
That's a good idea.
That's what we use our old books for, put them on the shelf out there, put cobwebs on them.
Yep.
Yeah, you got that going on, Brian, with your haunt? You got a room with books and cobwebs and stuff?
Yeah, we got, well, it's kind of like the books that I have. Most of my books are in the science lab area. So it's kind of like it's a research. So I kind of got the old books that you find in garage sales, the old leather bound, anything old, just picked up. And but like you were saying, the escape rooms, because they use a lot of real things and they, I guess, hook them to contraptions and lasers, you know. What kind of stuff have you done for escape rooms? Have you created any sound, anything for escape rooms?
That's one part of the business I've really started picking up is I've done, let's see, I've got a couple of escape rooms up in Canada I've been working with. One here in Portland, and I've got a gentleman out in Midwest area. I think he's out of Ohio. I'm providing atmospheres and soundtracks for his clients. So what he does is he builds escape rooms for them, or at least gives them plans, gives them materials, and he throws the environmental sounds in that I provide for any particular theme. So it's part of his package. So I've got like three that I'm working on for him right now. But for escape rooms, they're pretty consistent in terms of, you know, they're all going to be 1 hour in length. Sometimes they'll want lobby music. Sometimes you'll have some sound effects to go with them. But the atmospheres themselves, it depends on their theme. So I've gone in anywhere from like a James Bond theme to a haunted house theme to a obvious, like, you know, vault break-in type theme. I mean, they just run the whole gambit. There's some real creative people out there. So
when you're creating a sound for a haunt, what kind of a length of soundtrack? You said, you know, escape rooms are an hour because that's normally what it takes. What kind of a time frame would you make a track for a haunt?
So if it's going to be a 1 hour, and the way I work it out is we've got a package where if it's a 1 hour track, you can divide it up however you want. You know, maybe you have multiple rooms, or you can get individual sound effects to add on to that. But if I create 1 hour worth of looping sound effects, so your actors don't go crazy having to hear this all the time.
Thank you again.
Yeah. You know, 1 hour seems to be the magic number, because at that point you've kind of forgotten. Oh yeah. Okay. Now I think I hear something I've heard before. It takes about, depending on the theme, anywhere from about, I'd say 10 to 14 days to complete one. And that's mostly because we're composing new. And we're also a lot of times asked for things that, you know, if we don't have them in the library, we go out and do some field recording. And what I like to do is anytime I can, if it makes sense, is to go out and record new material. Like for the past 4 months, I've been on road trips just recording new material for this year for new libraries. And of course, for any sound design purposes that, you know, a haunt's going to want, you know, something new and fresh. So, yeah. So about, I'd say, I mean, max 14 days, you know, unless it's really labor intensive and they're, you know, they get drafts first. And if I have to go back and revisit it every so often, that's where the time comes in. So hopefully I get it done within one or two drafts and we call it good.
Right on.
If you want to hear the soundtrack that he did for The Dead Factory, our haunted house, then you'll have to come to Missouri and hear it.
Oh, man. Aren't you going to use some as a background to this?
I might throw a little bit in there right now.
SinfulAudio.com. Custom music for The Dead Factory, Haunted House, Mexico, Missouri. We'll be right back.
was good.
Nice. That's good. A take.
Take. Cut right there.
Ken, you were saying that, you know, you do also sound effects or do you do stuff for individual rooms? You do basically, you can do an overall track generally for the haunt, but let's say you're in a specific scene that is a lab, you know, mad scientist or Dr. Frankenstein's lab, you would do sound effects just for that room as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's usually a mix of one or two. It's either we want some specific sound effects for the room or we want some music or we want both. So it just depends on the client. I try to focus more on sound effects, but because music generally takes longer. Only because we're, you know, again, we're composing it from scratch. We're like, okay, here's the concept. Here we go. It's like doing it for a film. You're really mm-hmm. writing something new. So yes, like with Nightmare Factory here in Salem, they have individual rooms. And I think I wrote, well, actually most of it's sound effects. There are five different rooms specifically that we put together, I think 15 to, well, I want to say more like 20 to 30 minute loops is what they wanted for each room because people were passing through pretty quick. And they didn't have a lot of actors in some of these rooms. So I always caution them, like, okay, your actors, I don't want them going insane. And they're like, no, 30 minutes is fun.
Hey, I've worked 5 hours in a 4 minute loop. It's not fun.
Oh, you okay?
Oh, hasn't affected me a bit.
Now, classic 4 minute loops.
Don't you dare. Please don't dare. Now, one of the things is when you're, when you have that overarching soundtrack or theme or atmosphere that's going across the whole haunt, but you have something specific in a room, how do you isolate that sound to that room? Do you have any, you know, what kind of soundproofing it would be good to isolate that track while still having the rest of the haunt be on another
atmosphere?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really the key question, isn't it? And that's something I get asked a lot. I'll just start from the beginning. So here's what we're kind of up against as haunters and people who provide audio. And I feel like we're all in the same mix here, and we're also trying to contend with the same problem. So generally, the haunts that I've worked with, you've got and boy, Brian, tell me if I'm wrong, but you basically are using plywood for the walls. Is that correct?
Yes, OSB. So
okay,
but yeah,
but nothing real thick. I mean, you probably
half inch on both sides.
Okay, so the problem that we run into is sound, especially at higher frequencies, likes to travel through thin layers of any type of material. There is some absorption, but of course, it's going to get through. So there's a couple of techniques we can use. And you could try to soundproof something, but I've worked with studios in the past as an intern and done some engineering. Even the best studios in the world spend thousands and thousands of dollars for soundproofing. And a lot of times for home and even some professional haunts, unless you're Disney or Universal, you don't have that kind of money. So there's a couple techniques you can use, and I won't call one of these soundproofing. I'm going to call it more like sound attenuation and absorption. And so the couple things you can do are this. So you have a room, and you're very specific as to the sound effects you want in this room, and you don't want it to bleed out to other rooms as much as possible.
Correct.
So a lot of times, you're either going to have a mono speaker in there or possibly stereo. These are pretty commonplace. So you're not going to have like surround sound or anything. You'll want to get the speakers up high and you'll want to point them to the center of the room. Now, ideally in the room, you've got furniture, you've got carpet, you've got other things that will continue to absorb the sound waves as basically it converts it from sound energy to heat is the way sound is absorbed and or dissipated. So the more things that you have in a room, it'll attenuate that sound. Now, that's not a fix-all, but that's the first step in helping this out. So the other part of this is now you've got to contend with sound waves bouncing out at a 90-degree angle from wherever they hit. And generally, that's going to be to your walls. Your walls are going to absorb a little bit, and then they're going to let the rest pass through. So what we've put together, and just through trial and error, is we have some sound panels that we created, and I use these in my vocal booth as well, and it made a world of difference. So we use a product called Roxol. Are either of you familiar with this at all?
Very much so.
Okay, so you know where I'm going. No. So what we did is we created some panels, and the batting comes in a package of 12, and I think you can pick it up at Home Depot for $48. And what I went ahead and did is I took that batting and I just created a frame using some 1x3x8s and created a frame around that using cedar. I found that pine is a lot more brittle when you're trying to screw into it than cedar. So I went with cedar and created some panels from that. I think they're about 2 foot by 4 foot is what I want to say. And I put 10 of them into this vocal booth I shouldn't say completely, almost completely deadened the area. I mean, you can walk in there and you're like, oh, wow. I mean, this is, this is bizarre. So what I'm now recommending to Haunts is take that idea, and it's something that we're going to be writing a blog about here very shortly, is how to assemble these and what products to use. So Roxol being one of them, the cedar planks for the top, bottom, and the sides. And then for aesthetics, you can take it and then wrap it in any type of material that you want. You can go to like Fabric Depot or something like that. So you can make them look really cool, or you can make them completely black and nobody's ever going to notice them.
Or you can just, if you find you can hide them like behind a curtain or just a fabric scrim, so that it just becomes another part of your haunt.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing I love about Roxol is its ability to absorb high frequencies. It does a great job of that. The other part is that stuff is, I think it's rated up to like 2,500 degrees, so your cedar is going to burn off around that, but your Roxol is not ever going to get touched. So
what is this stuff made for originally?
Usually insulation.
And soundproofing, because where I'm familiar with it is my son used to be in a metal band. Neighbors across the street complained. This is across the street when he was playing in the basement. So I've got the basement sound deadened. We've got nice. Roxol in the walls, and we used a dual layer of drywall with a rubber compound in between. It's like so it's butyl rubber. It was like caulking, but it's
you could slaughter people in your basement, Daryl, and get away with
it. Don't tell everybody, but it's great because it makes a really great home theater room as well, because you're down there. It's not perfect. You can still yeah. hear. It doesn't completely reduce the sound, but it deadens it so much. That and have some soft things draped around different areas. No 90 degree corners, so that it doesn't tends not to. The opposite of what you're trying to do when you're trying to make things louder.
Exactly. So the other thing too, I mean, this is way off, but don't, like you were alluding to right there, is I don't know if you can do this in Haunts, but having any type of parallel walls, bad. If you can actually just get one wall to kind of, shift a little bit 10 degrees, for a good length, it's going to help keep standing waves from happening. I mean, it's another way to keep things from bouncing off 90 degrees, right? So, I mean, just little things like that. But I really iterate to people because they ask, well, how can I soundproof my haunt? And, I honestly say you can't. You're not going to soundproof it. But you can mitigate it,
Yeah.
So using that material, are you building like just kind of like frames for it and just...
That's what
just place them every so often on the wall.
Yeah. Now my frames I made by like 2x, I'm sorry, it wasn't 4 feet. Was it 4 feet? I'll have to look back on my notes. But my frames were about 2 feet by 4 feet. Now you can do whatever you want. That Roxol actually breaks up pretty easy. So if you got creative and you created a frame with some type of backing first and shoved all that Roxol in there, you could make a whole, or most of a wall from it. But the trick is, getting that batting to stay where it is. Now what I do is, again, I wrap that in some type of fabric, and just before I do that, I'm taking like a spray-on glue around the edges to just kind of have it set, and I let it sit there for a good hour. So it helps hold it in, but that fabric is really the key at that point. But again, you could go probably any size you wanted to, as long as you're holding that in place.
And then you just staple the fabric onto the cedar frame.
Yep, absolutely.
That's awesome. I'll have to put a link. When you get that blog written up, give me that link and I'll put it on this post.
Oh, I sure will. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
And because I knew that this question might be asked, when it comes to a per panel cost, at least from the size I was using, it's about $12 per panel before you put any type of fabric on it. So not too bad in terms of cost. And again, I'm working with 12 bats. So if you're, you know, from a volume standpoint, the price is probably going to be a little less as you, you know, if you're going to get 24, it's going to cost you a little bit less than that. So,
yeah.
So would it be good to like point one of the, like one of the speakers toward that way, or does it matter?
Wouldn't hurt.
At least it's center of the room, but I don't know. I know pointing the speaker into one of those would be making any better.
Yeah. Well, I'd probably point the speaker into the center of the room and then have those panels to the opposite of sides and near the doors so that the sound doesn't get out.
Yep. And again, try to get your speakers high pointed down to the center of the room. Because again, you're trying to take the sound wave and direct it somewhere other than the side of your walls. So the first thing it's going to do is hit the center. It's going to get absorbed by something. You know, you might plan for that. It's like, okay, what's in the center of my room? Well, let's put some thick carpet in there or something. Let's put a desk or whatever fits your theme. There's your first absorption. Then everything that goes out at a 90-degree angle from that, you can then say, okay, my my baffles are going to pick up the rest or absorb the rest. So it's kind of a two-step right there.
Okay, well, let's throw another oddball question at you that I believe that some of our listeners will enjoy, and hopefully enjoy the answer. I've got a compressor running all my props, all my air-powered stuff. How do I baffle the noise from that?
I'd create an encasing for that.
Would you line it with the same sort of stuff?
I would, yeah. There's now, you can look online. There's some expensive alternatives to this, and that's they use it a lot for computers back in the day when you had full towers, the whole thing. It's kind of the same idea. You have a box, and it's got soundproofing in there of some type, like Oralex or something like that, and you have some small holes in the back to let the cables through, but otherwise your cleat tower is encased and quote unquote soundproofed at that point. So my thought is, well, you got some compressors. I would just create a box, throw it over there, something that, you know, meets the size requirements. And I think you're going to probably see some really good attenuation with that.
Right. Yeah. So right now we're keeping ours in a kind of a room that's away from everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost about the size of a walk-in closet, I guess. And that would be a good idea because then I can just line it with that.
See, and kill even more sound. Before. That might be fun. I would love to try putting that together.
Yeah. Because we're going to upgrade. We got to upgrade compressors this year. The other one just was working too hard. So.
Oh, you need one of those 200-gallon ones or whatever they are?
Nah, maybe. We're shooting for 100, hopefully. So we'll see. We don't have a lot of air-powered stuff, really. We had one prop last year that was air-powered, and we might have three this year. So not a whole lot. And I know you can use tanks near the props that fill full of air, so you don't have the compressor running all the time too.
Yeah,
we didn't do that last year, so we're going to try to use smaller tanks closer to the props. So, but the soundtrack was awesome though. I mean, we had Ken did a factory soundtrack, and that was playing in our queue line. So when you walked in, I probably had like three speakers just dedicated to that one soundtrack. Because I wanted everything loud up front, so everything, you really couldn't hear all the screaming and stuff in the back. And I think he did his job, because it was a lot of different machines and things falling and banging and clanging. And it sounded like you're in a factory, so it fit the theme quite well. And me and Ken just talked once on the phone and emailed a few times about what I wanted. And
well, Brian's being very, very generous. Thank you, sir. I'm glad that worked out.
I did. It was good. So you went to an actual factory to get that, right?
I did. It was an aluminum factory.
Yeah.
They were, it was so funny. They were so excited to have me there. I was like, well, I mean, it was really interesting. They were like, oh my gosh, let's show you this and show you this. And it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
At first though, like what was their thought when it's like, yeah, I'd like to record your factory. And they're like, are you nuts?
Well,
I'm doing it for a haunted house.
You never get them saying that, but that first like minute of silence, you know that's what they're thinking. You know? And I tell you, more often than not, if it's a place that just has never been asked that before, it does take them a second. You can just hear them processing what you're trying to do, and they'll either ask, "I'm sorry, could you explain that again?" Or they'll be like, "Oh yeah, I bet we have some great sounds for you." You know, but it takes that little bit of minute to get going. Yeah.
Did you know that I co-owned a haunted attraction for 3 years? Do you know why I failed? I was uneducated about the business side of owning a haunted house. That is why us here at Haunt Topic Radio keep finding you the specialists within the haunt industry and bring them to you. Yeah, I'm talking about our haunt startup online seminars. Now you don't have to attend a trade show or a convention to get the skills you need to open your first haunted attraction or make your current haunt successful. Save money and save time. All you need is an internet connection and a device of your choice. Just grab your laptop, your tablet, or smartphone and start learning today. Experts like Leonard Pickle teaching you the truth behind owning your first haunted attraction and designing your haunted house.
Well, you have to have both. You have to have the quality of experience, but you also have to have the marketing. If you don't have the marketing, it's not going to matter.
Or how about Alan Hopps on scare acting management and how to keep your employees coming back every weekend?
And really becoming a people person is what will help make your haunted house thrive. You know, having your actors love you and support you and want to do anything for you.
That's just to name a few. Our library of seminars and haunters grows bigger every year. Not only do we host live online webinars with the pros in the haunt industry, we record them just in case you can't make our live event. To check out our growing list of online courses or to register for our next live online seminar, head on over to haunttopic.com/start. We will continue to update this page with new recorded classes and any other information related to your educational goals. We will also continue to announce our upcoming live webinars here on the podcast. Get prepared at haunttopic.com/start today. Well, welcome back to another episode of the Haunter's Toolbox. In this short segment, we'll be talking about creating sound effects and soundproofing your rooms. Ken's already covered a great deal on soundproofing and things to use for soundproofing. I was doing a little research on Google. If you Google soundproof a room, you'll come across different materials to use. Ken uses the Roxol, which is a rock wool insulation. There are other people that use foam, corkboard, rubber. So when you're thinking about designing your rooms, think about using soft materials. Of course, Ken's mentioned using furniture and stuff and more things, rugs, carpet, anything to deaden hard surfaces. And if you Google soundproofing materials on Google, you'll come up with a lot of different ideas and ways to create and redirect your sound and kind of keep the sound all located in that room, one room. And as Ken stated, there's not 100% soundproofing, but you can get close and you can deaden a lot of the sound. And reposition your speakers using the correct size of speakers. Don't use too big speakers, too small speakers. You'll have to do some fine tuning, but what works in your room. And those that have outdoor attractions, you'll have to use barriers to kind of keep some of the sound located in one area. As far as creating sound effects go, there are a lot of free audio websites out there. Soundbible.com was one that I came across and had a few cool sound effects. Now, I've used my old CDs. I have CDs that I bought from Spirit and Hollow or Walmart that have sound effects on them. And I still have a DVD player on my computer and a CD player. So I will take sound effects off old CDs and create my own little thing. Another good resource is go to YouTube.com Audio Library. The YouTube Audio Library is made for videos, but they also have Creative Commons licensed Creative Commons music and sound effects that you can use also. And they also have these programs that let you rip audio from YouTube videos, which not sure how legal or illegal it is. However, there are a lot of people that do it. You can just find a YouTube video that you like and you want to rip the sound from. You enter the link of the YouTube video in the software program and it'll automatically download that MP3 off that video. You just have to search YouTube sound software or YouTube to MP3 and you should come up with a list of players that you can download. But over on the YouTube audio library, a little hint, if you go to youtube.com audio library and narrow down your search to ambient and dark, you'll come across a bunch of ambient dark noises that you could use. And of course, to put all this together, we recommend using Audacity, which is a free program. And once you get the hang of it, it's pretty simple to use. But if it's still not what you're looking for, then you must contact sinfulaudio.com and talk to Ken, because he will get you hooked right up with custom sound for your traction. Well, let's get back to our interview with Ken Webster from Sinful Audio.
So tell us a little bit about what Sinful Audio is up to.
Oh boy, we have, it's been a good couple years since we last talked. Escape rooms have really grown, and it's something that we've been doing a lot more focus on. We haven't lost focus on haunts by any means, but escape rooms have been busy. Great thing about them, they're year-round. They're not seasonal, and that's I feel a lot of – in fact, we talked at West Coast about this. There's a lot of haunts that are looking to incorporate some methodology with the escape room because, again, it is not seasonal, and it's something they can generate some revenue over time, over the whole year. We are also working with adding some new vendors in terms of speaker systems and sound reinforcement. We want to kind of help put together a full package of, here's your speaker setup, your amp setup. If you're interested in infrasound, we've got some options for you in terms of butt kickers and some ways of putting sounds together so you can get more of a tactile feel in your haunt. So we're exploring a couple different avenues, but staying true to audio because that's, we feel we know most about. I mean, don't ask me to do video. You won't like it. So, but yeah, I mean, we're really trying to pick up some steam in the actual physical product arena so that we can, put together full packages instead of just sound effects.
Now, you were talking about infrasound. Some of our listeners might not know what that is. Explain what it is and why you would want to use it.
Well, the short, infrasound is anything that, for the most part, the human being can't hear with their ears. They can feel it, most likely, depending on the frequency. So infrasound, and I'll have to cite Nightmare Factory again because they've been kind of our guinea pigs for a lot of different projects. They used some very low bass signals that we had coming from a bass amp for one of their rooms. And what we wanted to do was something a little different. It was a room that had kind of a bottomless pit look to it. They had, through the use of mirrors and other things, it was pretty darn scary. I walked through it and it really bothered me. But they wanted something different from an audio perspective. And I said, well, here's something we could try. So with audio, a wavelength is very much the same as, a given dimension of a room, right? So we knew the dimensions of this room, and I wanted a wavelength that would match the length of this room. And it so happens that they're very low frequencies. This one was probably around 32 hertz, very low. Some people might not be able to hear it, especially as people over 40. So we had a speaker that was able to output this particular signal. And what happens is from that source signal to the other end of the room, it bounces from that wall back to the speaker. And it does in such a way that it's basically signaling over itself. Okay. So if you think of a sine wave, you think of an S curve, and it's just going back over itself. It creates these standing waves. It's very odd to the human hearing / what you can feel. It's not natural. And what ended up happening is a lot of guests, they would comment on the fact that there was something very odd about that room. They could feel something. We even had some guests that said it made them a little nauseous or made them feel very uneasy, which is very much the distinction of infrasound is at very low frequencies, you feel it. Some people become uneasy. I have a whole article on it too. I'll be blogging about that as well. I have the owner of Nightmare Factory who's going to give me a quote on a few things and explain what his clientele and the actors were experiencing. But the reason it's important, we don't want to get people sick, obviously, but we do want them to feel something akin to uneasiness and a feeling of dread. So the key here is now you can feel a room. You can feel something odd, different, without a prop, without hearing anything necessarily. And the reason the Nightmare Factory really wanted to try this was they are home to the Oregon School of the Deaf. So a lot of the folks that, you know, work it and some of the students who come through, they can't hear anything. But when they can feel something, a vibration or something that just reacts to their touch, it makes the experience even better for them. And even for us, you know, a lot of us who can hear, it's just a very different experience than you'll find anywhere else. And I feel the importance in that is just one is taking all of your senses, and the more you appeal to those senses, you're going to remember it more. You know, you've got the sight, you got the sound, now you've got a smell with like Froggy's Fog. You know, you can smell certain areas. You know, we don't want to get into taste. I'm not even going to touch that one with a 10-foot pole. But
some haunts do it though.
Some haunts do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. But if you can feel something too, it's like, wow, you're definitely going to remember it. You're going to tell other people about it. And it's going to be a really cool experience because now you're covering even more of the senses that normally maybe wouldn't be. So
now, do you sell these speakers on your site, or can you, are they typical speakers, or?
I'm not selling the low frequency speakers yet. I'm trying to find a good vendor that, one, I'm looking for a good product. And a lot of the companies that, like, if you, does anybody here play bass guitar? Have they ever played bass guitar?
I have, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I'm looking at, you know, Galleon Kruger, I'm looking at PV, I'm trying to get some support there. But a lot of times I just tell Hans, if you want that infrasound and you've got an old amp, you know, that you, you know, you, that can handle bass frequencies, use that. At this point, you know, we're still working with, you know, your smaller speakers that, you know, are Bluetooth, can handle SD cards. We're still trying to explore that area. The next set is let's get some bass speakers that I can depend on a vendor to deliver so that we can really ramp up the infrasound side of this. We haven't ramped it up yet. We want to make sure we have supporting documentation, supporting products to really drive that home.
Excellent.
Excellent. Yeah, I have one of those old powered 12-inch subwoofers, the big ones that were made in the 90s.
They weigh 2 pounds.
Yeah, exactly. I got one of them, so I might try. I was thinking about experimenting with that this year.
If you go that route, let me know the dimensions of your room and how your setup is, because we could have some fun with that.
Cool. So, Ken, what kind of... where can everybody find your stuff and maybe contact you if they want some audio design for their haunt?
Well, same old place. Everybody can come out to www.sinfulaudio.com. And you can email me directly at ken@sinfulaudio.com. And if you have questions, you want to find out more, please contact me. That's what we do. And we want to try to make your haunt the best it can be.
You out there on Facebook, Instagram, anything crazy like that?
Yes and yes. So Facebook, Sinful Audio. You can find us on Twitter. Don't ask me what that address is.
It's on the website.
You can probably put in Sinful Audio.
It's on the website.
Pop right up. Yeah.
Somewhere on the website.
Go like his Facebook page.
Go like that Facebook page. The more likes, the better. Hey, we got an online store on Facebook, too. So.
Oh, wow.
Oh, you're diving into that realm.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Facebook's trying everything, man. I tell you.
They're just trying to keep up with it all.
Yeah, they just changed the algorithm again on Facebook. So now it's like, if you notice, you'll see more of your friends' stuff now.
Well, that's an odd concept.
Yeah, well, I guess they surveyed everybody, and the users were, if you don't have users on Facebook, you don't make money on Facebook. So they were trying to make the users happy. And so what that means is now Facebook fan pages are getting less, even more, less views, and you're just going to start paying for more and, you know, make the money like that.
Damn it.
I know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Prices probably go up.
Yeah, I've run a few ads, and it at the end of the month, I'm just like, I really ran that much? Ouch.
You're supposed to put a limit on that, Ken.
You can put limits?
Yeah.
Nobody told me.
It's, well, it's like a bad month at Vegas and you didn't win anything. It's like,
ah. That's funny. That's funny. Because, yeah, I work in a marketing department, and we have some dealerships that work for auto dealerships. And sometimes they want to spend, you know, $1,000 a month, and other times they want to spend $10,000 a month. And then they complain that they spent too much. So they, you know, you're working on $5,000 or $6,000 a month. And then it's like, oh, we had a bad month, so we've got to cut our advertising down to $1,000. Or 500. It's like, well, this makes no sense, because we've proven that you're actually people are actually buying off our leads, right? So just, I don't understand, but hey, whatever.
Well, they say if you can find that magic ratio where you're, you know, you're spending a dollar, you're getting two back. I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts and I played around with Facebook ads last year, but I didn't get into the, you know, I set up my custom audiences and, the radius, because being local, you know, you do like a 50-mile radius, and then you can target like 16 to 35 year olds or, now I guess, because I haven't played with them this year, but I guess they changed it. So now there's more interest groups. So if you want to target, like if I want to target local haunted attractions and have ads display over there on their Facebook page and stuff like that, or target their audiences that like their page, I can do that.
Well, I got to get better at that. Brian, you and I are talking later.
All right, man, I can tell you all kinds of tricks.
I need as many tricks as possible because my bag is half empty now.
Yeah.
Hey, I can see the little banner going up. We'll trade marketing advice for infrasound.
Exactly. Well, I think, you know, I really want to push infrasound because, one, it's a neat technique and it's been proven now. I mean, I'm really happy with the results. So it's gone from, you know, white papers to actual physical effect. And it's like, okay, let's keep this up.
So are you staying pretty steady with all your, you know, work coming in? And
it's getting more active. I've got some repeat clients coming back, which is fantastic. And then I've got additional work and more work in the escape room realm going on. And then I gave a workshop back at West Coast and gained 3 new clients from that. And then one person contacted me who heard your podcast, my friend.
Sweet.
Uh-huh. Yep. He wants some surround stuff done for a seance. I couldn't be happier. So.
Oh, wow. That'd be fun.
Yep.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Voices whispering in full, you know, full 5.1 right on.
Yeah, yeah, all kinds of channels. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I think he's going to push me to 7.1. So.
Yeah. Oh, that could be cool.
Yeah, so that's a lot of fun. But that, I got to thank you guys for that. That was from a podcast that said, or from Haunt Topic. He said, yeah, it inspired me. I said, really? Yeah. All right. Let's go.
Well, we want to hear from you and from him. So remind him that that once this is working and playing in his haunt, that we want a firsthand report of review of you and how it's working in the haunt and what the hell the customers are thinking.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, one more plug I was going to see about putting in is if anybody comes to me now I'm thinking about this that heard this podcast, I want to offer 10% on effects and services that we do for sound design. So just mention Haunt Topic and there we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here.
So get it now before it gets too late and it's already October, you know.
Yeah, end of August.
Get the jump on it.
It's going to start heating up.
Give him about 2 weeks to get it done.
Yep.
Sweet.
Well, thank you both. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks, Ken.
Have a great evening and a great season.
You too. Thanks.
I descended the cramped stairwell, sparse vistas allowing further gaze upon the piping and wires from the organ machine. The caverns beneath the chapel had been hollowed into a crucible, with more corpses fastened to the subterranean rotunda. Wires and piping affixed to the animated cadavers, feeding foul ichors into the bodies, while alchemical conduits ran from their mouths, issuing phosphorescent fluid back into the base of the mechanism's matrix above. It was a large domed antechamber, occupied by 5 robed figures, surrounding an eldritch altar, adorned with foul scriptures, and a child suspended upon an ebony cruciform monolith. The central figure was conversing with a ghostly visage. Only his upper torso was visible.
Preparations are final, my lord. All will be complete in moments. We may yet accomplish...
See to it! I leave tomorrow to acquire the residence. I shall return thereafter.
Ever your servant, my lord
Do not speak my name! There are others who travel these ethereal channels. Finish your rituals and prepare for my return.
Yes, my lord.
The ghostly image faded, reducing the rotunda to torchlight. The figures clustered around the cruciform monolith and began chanting. A resonating throb began to rise. I felt the very stones beneath my feet begin to tremble. My head began to reel as I saw a small black orb of the darkest magic begin to form before the suspended child. Time slowed, and I knew I needed to act. These were the foul bastards responsible for such blasphemy on these children. I was responsible for their deaths, for sending them to their fates. But I saw one small chance, at least one life that I might save. I tried to still my nerves, calm my thoughts, and focus on a spell of attack. The only offensive spell I dared use. I felt the miasma of magic surround my body, and I rounded the corner and fired. Arcanus Tellum. As I fired, I was knocked to the floor, and the giant beast, followed by Frederick, crashed through the ceiling. I saw my mystical arrow sail, but only strike the lead heretic's hand. In the cacophony, the heretics fled, disappearing into tunnels. The beast, severely wounded, raised itself shakily, its eyes finding me. With a mighty roar, the beast reared, but with one last burst of dying strength, Frederick plunged his holy blade through the monster's head. The behemoth collapsed on the stones as it and Frederick released their final breath. I crawled to my feet, surveying the rotunda. The child was whimpering softly, and I rushed to free him. A pointed hat covered his head, with markings stitched along its face, and removing it, I saw similar foul sigils carved onto the child's skin. But I recognized him. Flavius. I had given the poor soul to the clergy just 2 days before. I wanted out of the foul ruins, and while I helped Flavius get to his feet, I searched for a way out.
Thank you for listening to Haunt Topic Radio. Please leave a comment wherever you found this podcast. Each comment you leave will help spread the word to other haunters around the world. See you next time.